It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome aboard. Recently, we told you about the great pheasant hunting available this season in southeast Wyoming. This week, though, we've got news about pheasant hunting in northern Wyoming. Unfortunately, you're going to be seeing fewer birds in state wildlife management areas in this part of the Cowboy State. The reason? A salmonella outbreak this spring at the Sheridan Bird Farm. The outbreak killed about a third of the 18,000 chicks hatched here this year. That means there'll be a third less birds available for planning in the San Mesa, Ocean Lake, Bud Love, and Yellowtail wildlife habitat management areas this year. On the bright side, these outbreaks are rare and things should get back to normal next fall. Until then, you'll have to work a bit harder for your roosters this season in northern Wyoming. This week, we're going to talk more about pheasant hunting in Montana and Washington with outdoors writer and book author Rob Phillips. Rob is the longtime outdoors columnist for the Yakima Herald Republic, and he chases ringnecks around his home turf of central Washington, but also makes an annual foray to central and eastern Montana, where the hunting is far better for pheasant than it is in the evergreen state. Rob will give you some tips on planning your own do-it-yourself Montana pheasant hunt and tell you about his three crime novels where the heroes are a game warden and his trusty yellow lab. Bob Loomis has been fishing at Eastern Washington's Banks Lake for walleye, and we'll let you know how that went, and then we'll talk to Steve Caramile, the Inland Fish Program Manager for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. The topic? Columbia and Snake River walleye. Over the last two decades, this has been a world-class trophy fishery in the winter months, attracting walleye anglers from all over North America, but it's in decline because of the way it's being managed by Oregon and Washington State. Both states have removed all daily limits and size restrictions for walleye in these and other rivers in hopes of reducing the amount of salmon and steelhead smolt walleye eat every year. We'll dive more into this contentious topic just after the bottom of the hour. Our final guest for our program resides on the Oregon coast in Brookings, just north of the border with California. Steve Huber is a longtime guide who is offering crabbing and bottom fish trips out of Crescent City right now that look to be a lot of fun. And Steve's also going to tell you about the steelhead fishing trips he'll be offering this winter on the Chetco and Smith Rivers. And both of these rivers look like they're going to be fishing very good in comparison to a lot of our other Northwest steelhead rivers this year. Throw in our ever-popular Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week, where you get the chance to win a $25 gift card from America's Premier Outfitter, and I'd say we've got a great hour of fishing, hunting, and conservation ahead. So, let's get things started, as we always do, with another edition of Sportsman Spotlight with David Sparks, brought to you every week by the Ag Information Network of the West.
Longtime friend Chad Hood told me he was going to Alaska in an effort to bring home some fresh-caught salmon. But when Chad goes to Alaska, it's not really simple. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight.
I went in with two people I'd never actually done a remote trip with before. We went into remote Alaska and stayed 8 days out in the bush, probably, I don't know, an hour from the nearest civilization. And we floated a couple of different rivers, actually, where we got picked up in the middle. We were targeting silver salmon primarily with the hope of getting some early steelhead as well on one particular river. This trip was a complete do-it-yourself. So myself and my partners, we planned all the details. We furnished all our own gear. And all we really did was we had an air charter fly us out to these areas. And so with that, we were in very dense brown bear country. And so that was kind of one aspect of the trip that always elevates the senses, if you will. I think in the time we were out there, we had like 28 different bear encounters. You know, in some cases, we saw the same bear a few times in a row, but kind of one fun little thing I do when I'm on those trips is tally the amount of bear encounters. But we did have 28 on that trip over the course of 9 days.
Chad's a very calm person. He has to be. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight.
Did you hear that? That's the sound of great careers in agriculture. one of which could be yours. With the number of different job boards that are online these days, it can be overwhelming trying to find out what best suits you as an individual in the ag industry. Hey, sift through the clutter and find your agricultural career on the job board focused on you, agcareers.com. AgCareers.com is the leading online job board for the agricultural, food, natural resources, and biotechnology industries. We are committed to fueling the next generation of talent in agriculture in an effort to feed the world. We understand and support the vast number and variety of careers possible in the industry, from welders and biotechnologists to agricultural teachers and software developers. The time to work in agriculture has never been better, with nearly 6,000 career opportunities available on agcareers.com. An opportunity for you is out there. Search for your future today on agcareers.com.
Enjoy a meal of wild Alaskan seafood delivered right to your door. C&C offers premium quality wild Alaskan fish and shellfish to include Copper River King and Silver Salmon, Halibut, Black Cod, King Crab, and of course, Copper River Sockeye Salmon. Order it blast frozen or smoked and experience a slice of Alaska for a special meal you won't forget. Buy your seafood now at cnase.com. That's S-E-N-A-S-E-A, cnase.com. You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. We've got Rob Phillips on the line. He's the longtime outdoors columnist for the Yakima Herald Republic. He's the author of three recent novels combining fish, wildlife, and crime. And he's also an avid pheasant hunter and salmon angler. Rob, great to have you back on the air.
Thanks, John. Glad to be with you this morning.
Well, as I recover from my broken leg, I spend a lot of time on Facebook, living vicariously through others, and that includes you. You just got back from your annual pheasant hunting trip to Montana. Why don't you tell our listeners how that went?
Yeah, we go every year. It's more than anything, it's just to get the dogs on some birds. I live in central Washington, and we used to have quite a few birds around here, and we still have a few, but when you can take a dog over to some place where there's a lot more birds, you know, eastern Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, you know, they get more birds in 3 or 4 days of hunting than we get all year here. So we make that annual trip. We go into central eastern Montana. We hit several different places, and they had a pretty good drought back in eastern Montana this year. And so there were some places where we normally hunt, we didn't find a lot of birds, so we kind of had to search around. But any place you could get close to the Milk River or the Missouri River in some places, we found birds and found some pretty good hunting and had a really good trip. So,
very nice. Always love the fact that you go out there every year, and you do seem to do pretty darn well every year. And also living in Washington State, you're absolutely right about the state of pheasant hunting in the Evergreen State. It's not very good. It's not very good at all.
I think in the eastern, maybe far eastern counties, southeastern counties around in the Palouse and some of that, I think there's still some birds. But, you know, Yakima County used to be one of the top pheasant counties, and we just don't have that many birds. I have heard some people say in around Othello and stuff's not been too bad, but I haven't ventured there yet to see for myself.
Well, you might have to do that, and I might have to do that too. Meanwhile, let's get back to Montana. For some of our listeners who might be thinking about planning their first pheasant hunting trip out there, either this fall or next fall, let's talk about how to do this. Now, the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks website is definitely your first stop. But generally speaking, what are the areas that are good for pheasant hunting? And how did you go about planning your first trips when you were looking at a DIY public lands hunting trip?
Yeah, I did start with their website, and they've got a great website. Other states should sure take a look at what they do in Montana, because I like a lot of the things that they do back there. The other program that really helps hunters is their block management program, where they've enlisted, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of acres of land for hunters open to just the public. You have to sign in, or you have to get permission from the landowner, but it's really a nice program. And while there's a lot of big game hunters that take advantage of that, there's, I think, more and more upland hunters are figuring that out as well. So we just kind of started just poking around. Because we hunt deer back there, we kind of saw birds in certain areas. And so we decided, why not go back there and start looking for some birds. But Lewistown, from Great Falls east, almost to the North Dakota border, is all pretty good country. Again, if you can find some creeks and stuff. Pheasants Forever has a couple of habitat projects in that country around Stanford, Lewiston. We found some good birds in Winnet. And then north of that, again, along the Missouri River, if you can find some block management land where it butts up against the river and you can get down to the river. There's even some islands in the middle of the river. If you take a little rubber raft or something and get out there, the birds just don't get hunted there, and it can be really good.
Speaking of pressure or lack thereof, how many people are going to Montana and making that a pheasant hunting destination? Is it the same as South Dakota, where you just have droves of people from all over America, or is it a little less pressured than that?
Yeah, it's a lot less pressure, John. I've only hunted South Dakota once and North Dakota three or four times, but we've never seen the number of hunters in eastern Montana that we've seen in the Dakotas, especially if you go after the season opens. It opens usually in like the second Saturday in October.
Right.
We just got back. We were 2 weeks after the opener. We found plenty of birds, and we didn't run into another hunter. It was like having your own private, you know, hunting grounds. The other thing we do, and I think, again, because we're bird hunters versus deer hunters, we knock on a few doors.
Sure.
If we see some birds and see an area that looks good to hunt, we'll find the farmer and talk to him. And we've had some really good success. They're very friendly and open. Some will tell you, no, we've reserved it for friends or whatever. But others will say, yeah, go ahead if you're just hunting birds.
Nice.
And we always take some smoked salmon and some good Yakima apples, and they seem to be very happy to receive those. And that's how we got some birds this year. Is we found a farmer that led us onto some land where we saw some birds, and we just had the place to ourselves. So it was really, really enjoyable.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And you're absolutely right about bearing gifts when it comes to getting permission to hunt on private land. And in Washington State and Oregon, it seems smoked salmon is a great gift to go ahead and offer folks in the Rocky Mountain West.
They don't get fresh smoked salmon very often. And we stopped back by the farm later, and I told them thank you, and they'd already eaten some of the salmon, said it was the best they'd ever had. So we made a friend for life, I think. I think we can go back there every year now and probably get permission to hunt. So
perfect. All right, let's shift gears. We need to talk about your books. I mean, during COVID, you started off with your very first novel, The Cascade Killer. It was a smashing success. You've come out with two more since then, The Cascade Predator and Cascade Vengeance. Why don't you tell our listeners who haven't heard about this series of books yet a little bit about the characters in them?
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, John. Yeah. My main character, my protagonist, is a Washington Game and Fish Wildlife Officer, a game warden, and he travels Washington State, mostly Central Washington right now. But as I expand my book, I'm going to expand my horizons and his horizons. And he travels with a yellow lab, and they run into all kinds of situations, dead bodies and bear poachers and marijuana growers and just all kinds of things that really are, you know, out there in the real live world. And I add a little humor, and it's fairly quick read. It's real PG. There's no gratuitous sex or foul language or anything like that. I've had a lot of comments from readers that said they really appreciate that. So it's just kind of a good, wholesome, fun read. And because you and I know the outdoors, that's what I decided I would write about, is something I know about. And it's just kind of tied it into a couple, some mysteries. And it's been fun, and it's been really well received. I'm doing quite well on Amazon, and it's in a lot of local bookstores. And surprisingly, because I didn't really plan on that when I first sat down to start writing, I just wanted to see if I could write a novel. And it's gone really well.
There's a lot of folks listening today to our show on KIT 1280 out of Yakima. And folks, if you head to your local bookstore, there's a good chance you're going to find one of these three books, if not all of them. Again, we're talking The Cascade Killer, The Cascade Predator, and Cascade Vengeance. For everybody else, the place to go is Amazon.com. Just look for Rob Phillips and just type in Cascade. I think it's going to pop up in a hurry. And you're absolutely right. These are really fun reads. I sure enjoy them. Got to ask, I've only gotten through the first book so far. Is that FBI agent still around for the next two books?
Yeah, she is. She's kind of gotten into the hearts of Luke McCain, my May character, and his dog. And so, yeah, she's going to be part of the books going forward for sure.
Good. Yeah, don't kill her off. I like her.
Yeah, I had one person say, please don't tell me you're going to kill the dog. I can't read it if you're going to kill the dog.
No, we can't have an Old Yeller scenario here. That's not
not at all. So,
all right, we have got to go. But folks, again, Rob Phillips, great person to follow on Facebook if you want to keep up with what's going on in terms of pheasant hunting in Montana, and with his books, The Cascade Killer, Cascade Predator, Cascade Vengeance. They're all great reads, and they're also great gifts for Christmas too. So check them out at a local bookstore in Central Washington or online at Amazon.com. Rob, thanks for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it very much.
If your favorite season is deer, if your favorite salad is meat salad, if your favorite gifts come wrapped in fur or scales, if you're dreaming of a white and camo Christmas, then you'd fit right in at Sportsman's Warehouse. And lucky for you, Sportsman's is offering amazing deals all season long. So visit your local store or go online to sportsmans.com and gear up for an unforgettable holiday.
With more of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It's time for another Max Minute, brought to you every week by Max Lure. We've got a special fishing report edition for you with Bob Loomis. Bob, welcome back.
Thank you, John.
So, Bob, you and Richie Herod, the host of the Northwest Outdoorsman, you went fishing out at Banks Lake in eastern Washington on a November day, and you had quite a day. Tell our listeners about it.
Yeah, it was fantastic, John. You know, this time of the year, these fish go on the feed bag, and we just happened to hit it on a day that, you know, colder weather snapped a couple days prior. The water temperatures really start plummeting, and all of a sudden, these fish will just start feeding. And when you get large batches of bait fish, of course, you know, it's like the Thanksgiving dinner table. They're all going to show up.
So what were you using? How many walleye did you catch?
We were actually using the Sonic bait fish, and we were fishing it off of the back pull point. So it was basically fishing like a blade bait. And, you know, it was phenomenal. We probably caught between Eric Broughton, one of our pro staffers up there, and Britton, and Richie and I think we landed over 35 fish in a couple hours. And, you know, they were all really nice, solid. They probably averaged 20 inches. So they were nice fish.
Oh, my gosh. All right. What size of Sonic bait fish and how deep were you fishing?
We were fishing 35 to 52 feet. And we were using the Glow White, which kind of emulates the small perch that they were feeding on. And we used the quarter ouncer. All the colors worked, but that quarter ouncer was much closer to the size of the bait that we were using and worked extremely well.
Well, there you go. A fishing report from Banks Lake in eastern Washington. The walleye are definitely on the bite, and now you know exactly what to use to get at them. The Sonic bait fish from Max Lure. Look for it at sporting goods stores near you or online anytime at maxlure.com.
That's the sound you hear when a fish hits the new Sonic baitfish from Max Lure Company. This metal lure can be cast, trolled, or jigged, and will catch just about anything that swims in the sea, the river, or the lake. The Sonic baitfish has a unique vibration and flutter that can be rigged in seven different ways. With all sorts of eye-catching colors and weights available, you'll be rigging for the Sonic baitfish as your go-to lure. It's the Sonic baitfish. Only from Max Lure Company.
come to Oregon's Wallowa County for outdoors adventure. Hike, ride, paddle, fish, or sightsee to your heart's content. And then visit one of our wonderful towns, whether it be Joseph with its beautiful bronze statues, our county seat in Enterprise, or one of our charming small towns like Wallowa, Imnaha, or Troy, where you can eat, shop, and sleep before continuing your adventure the next day. Plan your visit now at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand access to the outdoors. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org.
Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Let's talk about walleye. Definitely one of the finest eating fish you're going to catch in the fresh water. And they've got quite a following all over the U.S. There's also a great fishery for them here in the Northwest, particularly on the Columbia River. And with us here to talk a little bit more about walleye here in the Northwest is Steve Caramile. He is the Inland Fish Program Manager for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Steve, it's great to have you back on the air.
Hey, John. Hey, it's great to be back here. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk a little bit about the trophy walleye fishery on the Columbia River. I mean, this is a fishery that draws anglers from all over the United States every winter and early spring who are all hoping to land a 10 to 20 pound trophy. However, Oregon and Washington, in the last couple of years, have, for lack of a better phrase, have seemingly declared war on the Columbia River walleye, and all daily bag limits and size limits have been removed. Why is this?
Well, yeah, John. So declaring war on walleye, I think that's just a little bit of an overstatement.
It makes for a great phrase on the radio. You got to admit it. I mean, if you're a media guy, this is a great way to segue into this conversation.
No, this is great. And actually, this is a great conversation to have. So, yeah, let's talk about our limits here on walleye in the Columbia River. So, you know, just really quickly and briefly, you know, back in 2013, we did, as an agency, make a conscious decision to remove our size and harvest restrictions on bass and walleye in the Columbia River system. And, you know, we did that in two phases. And Oregon did, I think, jump in with us in, I think it was 2016. And I think one of the things for people to remember about the Columbia River system is it's one of the largest and most important migratory corridors for salmon in this country. The Columbian Snake Rivers, you know, are home to 13 populations of spring, summer, and fall Chinook, as well as sockeye that are listed on the ESA. Upper Columbia Spring Chinook and Snake River sockeye are actually endangered, and the other 11 populations are threatened. And, you know, when you add to that hundreds of millions of dollars in public funds have been used in this basin over the years to help restore runs, you know, by doing things like improving habitat, restoring stream flows, improving farming practices, all types of things. And all of these had some degree of success. You know, we've made a lot of improvements to all this, but we still have a long way to go for recovery of these species. So our decision that we started once again in 2013 to remove the size and harvest restrictions was our agency prioritizing the protection and restoration of endangered species over managing fisheries for non-native species. But, you know, just for another piece here, back in 2019, the state legislature passed a bill. This was a second substitute House Bill 1579. This particular bill was carrying forward recommendations from the governor's Southern Resident Killer Whale Task Force, and in particular, it directed our agency, through law now, to liberalize the limits for bass, walleye, and channel catfish in all anadromous waters across the state. And so that was to increase prey for Southern Resident Killer Whales. And, you know, as you probably know or remember, you know, about 80% of the Southern Resident Killer Whales diet is Chinook.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that you did say is that in your opening statement there was that, you know, I mean, the Columbia River and the Snake River, it's a trophy walleye fishery, and we know that. And we know that it's really an important fishery for a lot of anglers across our state. And like you said, again, a lot of people from you know, across the country actually travel to our state to fish our wildlife populations. But we do still manage quality fisheries elsewhere in the state. Lake Roosevelt, Lake Rufus Woods, I mean, Banks Lake, Moses Lake, Potholes, you know, all these lakes that are in and around the Columbia River, we still manage these lakes for walleye. And as an agency, we believe that managing these waters is more appropriate for a quality fishery than managing the Columbia River.
I've talked to several walleye guides and tournament anglers who fish the Columbia, and I'm glad you point out that the walleye is not a native fish species. And folks, if you didn't get this, you know, why this decision's been made to liberalize the harvest of walleye in the Columbia, it's because, you know, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is trying to protect the salmon smolt and the steelhead smolt that these walleye like to eat. But these guides and these anglers have pointed out to me, how much do the walleye actually eat in comparison to other predators, like the northern pike minnow, which does have a program that's designed to keep their population down, or the smallmouth bass, or turning from fish to birds, cormorants and terns and pelicans. You know, the one study I looked at showed that the walleye is much less of a predator than the smallmouth bass and the pike minnow.
Yeah. So everything that you listed there, you know, whether it's pinnipeds or bird species like bullfrogs, you know, even, or a lot of our native and non-native fish species, you know, the northern pike minnow is a native species. Yeah, a lot of these are salmon eaters. And it's interesting when you start looking at some of the research that's been done throughout the years. You know, a lot of this research that we look at was probably done in the early 90s. And it's kind of all over the board. Some studies that you'll look at will say that smallmouth bass are, you know, eat more than walleye. Some will say that walleye eat more than smallmouth bass. I guess the point of the matter is that they all still consume juvenile salmon and steelhead while they're migrating downstream to the ocean, especially the smaller, younger age classes of all these fish. So if, when you're talking walleye, you know, fish that are, you know, highly abundant, the younger fish, age zero, age one, age two, the fish that are less than 20 inches or so, you know, that 16, 18, 20-inch fish, I mean, those are the ones that are really highly abundant in the population, and those are the ones that are doing a lot of the consumption. So it's hard for me to, like, actually place a number on, you know, what species is doing more of the damage, because the studies that you look at are really all over the place. I think the thing that to realize is it's just the cumulative effect of all of the species. You know, again, whether it's walleye, bass, catfish, pinnipeds, terns, you know, frogs, you know, whatever it is, it's just that cumulative effect. There was a study done, I think it was partially by our agency and probably, I think even the Yakima tribe, that showed that the mortality rate of juvenile salmonids from the lower Yakima River down to McNary Dam could be in the 70% range. So 70% of the fish that are leaving the Yakima River don't even make it to the first dam downstream.
That's amazing. That's horrible, horribly amazing. Did this study address the causes for this mortality?
So this study basically pointed towards predation. And they didn't point towards, you know, one species. I think they just said, as a whole, this is due to predation. So we need to, as a group, get a handle on mortality that is related to predation. And you know, once again, every little small piece adds up to something big.
You know, so many more questions. Unfortunately, we are out of time. But as George Orwell said in his book, Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others, and that appears to be the case when it comes to fish in the Columbia River as well, where salmon and steelhead are definitely winning out over the smallmouth bass and the walleye and the catfish, and now you kind of understand why. Steve, thanks for coming on board and explaining this to us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Hey, John, I'd love to talk walleye, so give me a call anytime.
Like I said at the beginning of this segment, walleye is a delicious fish, but you know what else is delicious? Wild-caught Alaskan seafood. And if you want wild-caught Alaskan seafood delivered right to your door, you need to order it Thrusina C. That's S-E-N-A-S-E-A. That's Sina C Seafood. They offer Copper River sockeye salmon, also Chinook and Coho cod in the salt water just outside of the Copper River Delta. They've got black cod, also known as sablefish, that's really a hidden gem, and of course halibut too. In addition to this, with the holidays coming up, they've got all sorts of gift packages, and you've got to check out their smoked salmon, halibut, and sablefish spreads. Absolutely delicious. It'll be a great hit at any holiday gathering or party that you're going to have. If you want to check out some of the great products they have available that are all packaged and handled with care from the time that they're caught until the time they arrive at your door, the website to go to is senasea.com. Again, that's S-E-N-A-S-E-A, senasea.com. Check them out and order today, whether it's for a special meal for you or somebody you love. We're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. Our next stop today is Brookings on the southwest Oregon coast. That's where we get to talk to Steve Huber. He's the owner of Steve Huber Guide Service and Crescent City Fishing. Steve, great to have you back on the air.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having us.
I want to talk steelhead with you. I want to talk saltwater fishing, and I guess we'll start off with the saltwater fishing. You are offering some rockfish and crab combo trips right now. Tell our listeners about these.
Yeah, so starting Saturday will be the opener of crab season in California. Looks like this northern part doesn't have any restrictions. We'll be able to get our pots in. The only drama is going to be the weather's been pretty tough, and it's going to be a couple of days before we able to get our pots out there and get our clients out there on a rockfish combo and a crab combo fishing trip charters. It's going to be a great way to put away some crab finally this year for Christmas and able to get your freezer full of some rockfish too.
So question for you. I know the limit for rockfish in Oregon is only 5. What's the limit for rockfish in California? What's the limit for crab?
Yeah, so we're allowed 10 crabs, and then our rockfish, we're allowed 10. We can have blacks, blues, coppers, vermilion, pretty good combination. Cabazon, too, which is the poor man's lobster, and you can still have 2 lingcod for a total of 12. So it's a plentiful fishery up there. We get some great fish, and right now it's been blues and blacks have been where we're at because we can't get out into that deep water with the big tides that are there. So we're hiding in the rocks and watching people tug on fish.
This kind of interests me here because I've done bottom fishing both ways. I've done the really deep stuff where you're, you know, jigging anywhere from 150 to 300 feet deep. And then I've done the lighter tackle stuff where you're in like 30 to 100 feet of water. Which are you doing?
No, 30 to 100 feet.
Oh,
yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, that 50 feet's my magic number. So we're on light gear, but, you know, you're still finding all those fish. You know, the bigger fish and some of the bigger vermilion and some of those other guys are in some deeper water. They're like that 100-foot water. But we're finding plenty of the other fish in that 30 to 50 feet, which just allows a lot more fun and allows kids and families to do it. And, you know, I've got some serious hardcore fishermen that want to go in that deep water. And I understand it, but it's tough when you're on a vacation and you've never done it before to keep playing in that deep water like that. So we offer both.
Well, I'm a big fan of the light tackle, shallow water rock fishing game. And, you know, you're going to get some lingcod too and some cabazon too. Like you said, it's just so much more fun. It's so much more enjoyable than trying to fish deep with that heavy gear. Let's go ahead and turn our attention to steelhead. Now, steelhead, the runs are not good up in the Washington coastal areas. The runs are not good on the Columbia and Snake Rivers. I hear they're decent, in fact, pretty good on the Rogue. How are we looking on the Chetco and the Smith?
So first, right now, we're still on salmon. So both the Smith in California, then Checo, Elk, and Sixes, and part of the Rogue are still having salmon roll in. So we got the first push of salmon that's happened the last couple weeks here. The bigger the storms, the more water comes in, the faster they come in. And then trailing right behind him here in a couple of weeks will be the first batch of steelhead coming in too. You know, the Checo is pretty different because of that broodstock program. And a lot of the rivers are starting to look at, you know, going to that. And that's where we have our hatch boxes and we put our fish into them. We put the wild fish into them and they take those fish and take them to the elk hatchery and actually raise those fish and then turn around and release them back into it. So that's what makes these bottom south coastal rivers really productive. And it's a great way to see what happens between, you know, the California Smith and the Checo are so close together, a half hour. And it gives us the freedom to, when the water gets high, you know, everyone's going to run to the Smith in California right now because it drops the fastest. It's the last undammed river there is. And then as soon as the Checo falls into place and it kind of spreads out and moves over and the Elk and Sixes comes into play. So we have a lot of multiple choices and variables to go find steelhead during our steelhead season.
All right. So November, you're still focused on Chinook salmon on these rivers. But then again, we've got steelhead coming. You're absolutely right about this broodstock program. I know that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has had very good success with this on some of the northern coastal rivers. And I'm glad to see it's taking place down there. I just wish that fisheries managers in Washington State, and I don't know if they're doing it in California or not, but you know, other states would look at doing similar things, because I think this could be really key to helping out our steelhead.
Yeah, it is. The Mad River, one down from the Smith, they've started a program too.
Great.
So they're finding the benefits of getting that, you know, true or better stock fishery into the fisheries in order to produce their hatchery fish, which, you know, leaves genetics better for, as true as we can call it, a wild fish. So it definitely raises a more healthier fish. And size-wise, you know, they can go the same distance. So it's been very productive here.
Well, it sounds like Southwest Oregon and Northwest California, that might be the best place in the Northwest to go for steelhead this winter. Let's talk about your trips. And I want to know about something that happens during your trips involving the breakfast burrito, too.
So, yeah, we have took ownership of a new Pavati this year. I'm not getting younger. And one of the features I truly love is the ability to get my clients in and out with a door. And so, yeah, we do have an oven on board. We did pulled pork sandwiches the other day.
Oh.
Breakfast burritos can go in the oven there. We heat them up. We've done pizza before. It's just something different to break up the day. And on those cold mornings, there's nothing better than a hot burrito. So, yeah, it's something we've been doing on our road trips, where Springer Fishing has actually cooked breakfast out there on the water. And so we've just kind of tailed it into our steelhead cold day fishing too.
Why don't you briefly tell our listeners about your new drift boat, this Pavati. How big is yours? And besides the door, which is very unique, what else do you like about it?
So it's a 16-foot Guardian, and it measures out between the other boats. It comes in at just over 17 feet. The door features is probably one of the features that I enjoy the most on it. I like the ability of being able to pick things up and move it around in the boat pretty easily. You can move each individual seat. You can move your rower seat back. If you have that third person, you can put them in the back, move your seat forward. It just has a lot of flexibility in its floor plan. You know, all the companies that make a drift boat all have quality drift boats. And my biggest hitch this year was not getting younger, and my clients aren't getting younger. So the door is just a lot easier getting in them out when they need a bathroom break, all that kind of fun stuff. And so we made the switch this year, and we rode it, broke it in last week, and I'm ready for a good season with it. So a lot of features. They all have a lot of features. And like I said, the drift boats all can be comparable in certain ways based on the conditions you need. So I have a Luma Weld for the ocean. I got a Willy boat for the river. And I have a Pavati in my drift boat. So I'm using the best of each one of these companies for the type of fishing I do.
All right. Well, folks, if you want to go fishing with Steve Huber, go to his website. You'll find that at stevehuberguideservice.com. On the saltwater side, you can also go to crescentcityfishing.com and book yourself one of these rockfish crab combo trips or a salmon or steelhead trip. I think you're going to have a lot of fun. Sounds like you're not going to go away hungry either. Steve, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Great, John. Thanks for calling, and I hope you guys have a great holiday, and we'll see you guys on the water.
Musky spinners and lures. Oh, honey, I love you, and that's not a lie. Musky guides all tell the truth. This must be the reason why I miss fishing more than I miss you. This must be the reason why I miss fishing more than I miss you.
Enjoy a meal of wild Alaskan seafood delivered right to your door. Sinasea offers premium quality wild Alaskan fish and shellfish to include Copper River King and Silver Salmon, Halibut, Black Cod, King Crab, and of course, Copper River Sockeye Salmon. Order it blast frozen or smoked and experience a slice of Alaska for a special meal you won't forget. Buy your seafood now at sinasea.com. That's S-E-N-A-S-E-A, sinasea.com.
From a bull elk ripping a bugle across the valley to wing beats on a duck marsh, public lands and waters are integral to our outdoor heritage. Become a member of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and stand up for our public lands and waters. Visit backcountryhunters.org today.
If your favorite season is deer, if your favorite salad is meat salad, if your favorite gifts come wrapped in fur or scales, if you're dreaming of a white and camo Christmas, then you'd fit right in at Sportsman's Warehouse. And lucky for you, Sportsman's is offering amazing deals all season long. So visit your local store or go online to sportsmans.com and gear up for an unforgettable holiday.
Did you know we actually have a sponsorship opportunity available for this show? That's right. You can be a sponsor of Northwestern Outdoors Radio, reaching thousands of listeners every week, tuning in to 69 stations in 7 states. If you have a business that caters to outdoors enthusiasts, this is the platform for you, and you're going to find it's much more affordable than you think. Contact me through my website at northwesternoutdoors.com, and let's get a conversation started. That's northwesternoutdoors.com.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
You've probably noticed it's getting cold out. In fact, some places here in the greater Northwest are already dealing with snow. It's the time of year where you break out the winter wear, especially winter boots. But do they still fit? Are they worn out? Or maybe you just want to upgrade to something warm and new. No matter the reason, you'll find some great winter footwear available at your local Sportsman's Warehouse store. And we're not just talking boots here. We're talking winter socks, too. And if you can't make it to one of the many stores here in the Western U.S., that's okay. You can shop online anytime at sportsmans.com. And now it's time for your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week. Let's talk waterfowl, shall we? Specifically, baby waterfowl. Baby ducks, they're called chicks. Baby geese, they're called goslings. Here's your question. What do you call a baby swan? If you know the answer, you know what to do. Go to our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio. If you haven't already, and there's a few of you who haven't that do enter our contest, please like and follow the page. Then go to the post thread where we have the question and give us your answer there. If you don't do Facebook, I understand. Believe me, I really do. Just go to our website then at northwesternoutdoors.com. Just shoot us a message and let us know what a baby swan is called. One lucky person who guesses right will win that $25 gift card we give away every week from Sportsman's Warehouse. By the way, I'd like to thank our sponsors who allow us to bring you the show every week. This includes, of course, America's premier outfitter, Sportsman's Warehouse, Max Lure, the company that's been with us, well, almost as long as the wedding ring spinner has been, the lure they invented. There's the Wallowa County Chamber of Commerce. We're going on almost 10 years with them, and they continue to invite you to one of Oregon's Seven Wonders. That would be the Wallowas, and don't forget backcountry hunters and anglers protecting our public lands. Finally, Sina Sea Seafood, our newest sponsor, offering you premium wild-caught Alaskan seafood delivered right to your door. If it wasn't for these sponsors and some of our other seasonal sponsors, we wouldn't be on the air. So do me a favor, if you enjoy hearing about the outdoors every week, show these businesses and organizations some love and give them your support. We're out of time, so until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.